Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome once more to the All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast. We're up to number 48 or something now, Rafe?
We are up to number 48. We're probably going to hit our big 50. That means before the end of the year. So woohoo.
Yes, we will. Because it will make a great story. What's happening between Christmas and New Year? Everybody's going, oh, my phone is not bad, actually. What's out there? 50. Makes us sound impressive and egalitarian and royal and everything, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, we started off these doing them fortnightly, I think, and then we quickly ramped up to weekly. So we have been, we've celebrated our 1 year anniversary, if you like. But yes, we're getting a lot more feedback from all our listeners, which we actually really appreciate, especially when they criticize us and correct us, because it makes us feel much better. Actually, no, joking aside, all feedback is good because we do make mistakes and these are kind of recorded in one take. So you'll have to apologise when we get a spec wrong. No, you're not going to be apologising. We're going to be apologising, aren't we?
Anyway. No. You're going to be apologising.
Oh, yes. I'm apologising.
You're apologising. Because I never see any of these mails. As far as I'm concerned, nobody listens to this. There are no fans. There are no feedback. Everything is fine.
Well, what can people email you at you and to give them your own thoughts or their thoughts even?
I'm kind of hoping you and at allaboutwindowsphone.com redirects to my rest of my email address.
It does.
Excellent. So use that one then.
Yeah, and I will try and forward on some of them. Although, indeed, some of them have been delivered in person, and thank you for doing that as well. And we do enjoy doing this podcast, so please keep the feedback coming in.
I just have this image now of our listener walking up to Rafe's door going, I've got some comments about the podcast. Could I have a cup of tea and sit down first to talk you through them? First, on episode 3, at the 12-minute mark, you suggested that this was... and so on and so on. Anyway, much appreciated. As always, your feedback can also be left in the comments back on the website, allaboutwindowsphone.com, where we have the flow, we have news, we have reviews. We try and give the whole range of everything, from short stories to long, in-depth stuff. And we've had a good mix of that this week, I have to say. Or at least I think we have, Rafe. We've had game reviews, app reviews, some commentary, new hardware as well. It's been a fun week, actually.
It has. We've had new devices to talk about, several of them, in fact. And then we've had some hardware reviews up and also software reviews. But one of the things I wanted to talk about first, before we kind of do a roundup of some of the news and features we've had this week, was that where were you last week, which is kind of why this podcast is actually running a little bit late, Ewan.
Now then, I was at the Junior Eurovision Song Contest.
Which is totally connected to Windows Phone, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. So first of all, it meant I had to spend a week in Amsterdam. Oh, hardship. Uh-huh. But it also meant that I could go away with the HTC 8X, which we've been testing and reviewing here on the site, and actually use it, not around in the office or in a sort of artificial, let's pretend to take pictures of rivers and stuff, but actually go out and use it in the real world, not with a big remit of checklists of things to review, but to actually just, you know, use it for a week as the main phone and come back and go, well, you know, what was it like?
So after 8 days with the 8X, were there any particular things that, you know, came out of it you haven't come up in the reviews that we've posted on the site?
There's a couple of things. The one that really gets me is that there's no physical cue to what the right way up is on the device. So if I pick up the Nokia Lumia 800, which I have in the rubber case, there are some clues when I hold it, which is top and which is bottom. So for example, the recessed buttons on the side of the plastic case, the way that the cutout for the camera and the silver spacing at the back is. It's possible by feel to realise what way is up. So I can pick it up in my pocket, know that it's the wrong way in my hand, and spin it around if I have to. There isn't on the 8X, because the buttons all match up along with the edge, because there's no special shape in that, because the little bumps in the back really, you can't, tactile,
I think is the word you're looking for, Ewan.
Tactilely, yes. Let's have another tactilely. Is that a word? I'll play it in Alpha Jack to see if it takes it. More on that later. So half the time I picked up the 8X and was trying to switch it on and realised it was upside down. And I know that that's, everybody's listening now going, really? You've been complaining you don't know what way up is. But, you know, these phones are meant to be taken out, looked at, switched on, looked at briefly and put away again, especially with the new lock screen. And I actually found it a little bit frustrating that I even after a week out there in Amsterdam, and a week using it here around the office, I couldn't get it just to work. You know, there was a physical have to look down and think.
Yeah, I do know what you mean about that. And the other thing with the 8X is the kind of the buttons that you're talking about on the side, and people are going, but it has got buttons on the side, so of course you can tell which way up it is. But
not you're buttons, right, they're razor blades.
They're kind of very thin, and you really have to run it over the tip of your fingertip to feel them. If just in normal use, you don't. And it's one of the issues I have with the device. It's not very easy to, you know, to kind of get those buttons without not exactly looking at them, but yet you have to think about it a bit. It's not just an instant thing. And the positioning of the power and the lock key, we commented on this in the review, but having been using the device a bit more, it's kind of annoying me more, not less. It is a standard HTC thing, so, you know, fair enough. And I know some people actually do prefer it on the top. But it kind of reinforces my impression that the 8X kind of almost put too much emphasis on style and not enough on usability. Now, it's, I think, a perfectly acceptable trade-off because, you know, we've said before, smartphones are all about compromise in their design and their specifications. And so for people who are kind of style-led, I think the 8X is the perfect device. And I really do appreciate the shape. I think it's a really beautiful piece of design that doesn't necessarily match up with, you know, being really easy to use. And you look at some of the other devices out there, like the 8S, for example, you know, it's a lot more ugly, but I think some people might say it's a more usable device. In a way, you have to be careful because, you know, one man's usable device is another man's nightmare. And I think 8X have actually done the right thing because they stand out from the crowd. It's a device that looks and feels very different, and, you know, the design team really has done a fantastic job. But it is something that people should be aware of before picking up the device. And, you know, I've just picked up the 8X, you know, as I was talking about.
Right way up or wrong way up?
I picked up the right way up, but just to reinforce this idea of a really nice design and something that feels nice in the hand, I've just been turning it over in my hands almost subconsciously without thinking about it. It's not something you do with other smartphones, really. It's kind of a sculpted object that almost begs just to be played with, and it sounds slightly bad, this, but just stroked and caressed. But it, you know, so although we're being sort of a bit negative here on the usability side, I really do think the 8X is a gorgeous piece of design. So, you know, there's two sides to that particular story.
If you actually play this podcast backwards, that point you just heard, you will actually hear Rafe go, my precious, it would be mine, stays in pockets. Spence can't have it, no. I think if I was using the 8X long term, I would probably take a little strip of masking tape and actually put it along the top back edge. So it really wouldn't be seen at the front, but when I pick it up, the index finger that kind of naturally sits in the top of the back cover, it would either feel rough or smooth. And I think that would just be give just enough tactility response to know what the right way up is. So yeah, I would. It's a review handset. We don't keep review handsets for a long time. We actually go out and get our own handsets for these ones. I won't be buying the 8X because I actually prefer a Land Rover towards something that has nice sculpted clean lines like a Citroen C5 or something. But if I was using the 8X, and there's nothing software wrong with it, let's be clear on that, I would probably put just a little something on the case to differentiate the orientation.
And there we go. Some HTC design team member has just died a little bit inside after Ewan's declared he's going to put masking tape on his beautiful design.
Well, you know, they could have done it. They could have put a little rough bit at the top, or they could have had a slip case that had some changes to the top, or they could have put maybe just a little sort of little bump like you have on a keyboard on an F and a J key. They could have put that on the volume buttons. You know, just enough to give enough a feel of this is where it should be.
That's what the micro USB port is for. One other thing I just wanted to bring up, Ewan, I know you bought a SIM card in Amsterdam to get local data, but one of the problems you came across was you then had to cut it down. It's not really specific to the 8X at all, but of course, more of these devices now have micro SIMs, and actually there's also, of course, a nano SIM in the iPhone 5. We yet to see how far that spread. Do you miss the kind of the standard size SIM, or do you think it's an acceptable trade-off given that, you know, space is at a premium in these devices?
You know, because we're going to these single-shell, monoblock, polycarbonate, injection-molded steel chassis, you have to have something that holds a SIM card. It was easier in the old days where the whole back cover came off and you could have a catch and put it in. You don't have that. You've got to have an access port from the side, which means invariably you either have to have a complicated spring push mechanism or you need to have a tray. Now, if you look at all these trays that come out, you find that a tray is actually the size of a regular SIM card. So there isn't actually any physical space saving here. But by having the tray and then having the cut-down SIM inside it, you actually have a full-size SIM card, but without any of the complicated release mechanisms. The HTC 8X is simply just like a push a safety pin in. I think the hardest thing was immediately, I need to find a safety pin. And then realized, of course, I carry a Filofax with me, and my Filofax pencil is 0.5 millimeters, which is exactly the right size for the hole. So there we go. Filofax wins. So it's a compromise in design. It means that the same size is still used as a SIM card, but it does mean that it can be slightly more flourishy, more designed, more cute on that. And again, we're going to talk a lot about the word compromise in this podcast. I feel looking ahead to the stuff you've got me talking about as well. This is a good compromise.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And just to add in some extra detail, I was talking to a designer about this issue and said, you know, people don't realise how much size that stuff takes up. And it's not just a SIM card, as you were saying there, it's the tray and the release mechanism.
And the contact pins on the circuit board.
And yes, everything else. And actually, when you look at how much that is in terms of the proportion of the circuit board, it's actually quite significant. Because obviously the biggest item inside a phone is the battery. And often the circuit board is just the top quarter or top third of a device. And the SIM card can be, you know, a significant proportion of that, anything up to about 20%. And obviously that's now come down now that it's been reduced in half. But of course, with these monocot designs, there is actually some added design constraints in that you have to have it accessible from the edge of the device, and that you generally have to have it centrally aligned. Otherwise, it looks a bit peculiar. You have to sort of build in the tray mechanism and have to have the mechanical strength around it. So it's not quite as straightforward as people tend to think. And incidentally, it's for that same reason why you tend not to have the microSD cards in all of the integral battery devices, because finding a place to put the if you like, the extra port or the extra door on the side of the device is far from straightforward, both in terms of getting it looking elegant, but also positioning it in terms of all the internals. But that's an issue for another time. I think we should probably move on to the new devices that were announced this week, Ewan.
I know, so near and so far. It's getting there. It's getting there for me. The Nokia Lumia 620 announced at Le Web in Paris, so Lloyd's conference was good for something this year. Marc Artisari took to the stage and showed off a really nice piece of design, I have to say. It's the Windows Phone 8 handset that's as close to the 800, the Lumia 800, as I think we're going to get.
Yes, I think that's probably a fair point. People sort of go, is there going to be another device? And there's always going to be another device. And I would point out that there has yet to be any 7XX from Lumia, from Nokia. So I think there's still more devices to come. And that might be in the sweeter spot for that kind of 800 size. But as you say, I mean, looking at the screen size and things like that, this is 3.8 inches. It's the same 800 by 480 resolution, 8 gigs of internal memory. There's micro SD card support, a dual core Snapdragon processor, but it's actually running at 1 gigahertz. So it's a step down from the other Windows Phone 8 devices, 5 megapixel camera. I've just given the game away there. It is a Windows Phone 8 device. I think the significant thing here, I mean, aside from the design, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is the pricing. Nokia announced this as, I think, £155, €190, $249 before taxes and subsidies, shipping in January 2013. What does that actually mean? Well, it means on the high street, you know, once you've done the taxes and some of the subsidy stuff, it's certainly going to be under the €200 mark, and probably will be quite a bit less than that as well. UK SIM free prices, it's around £185. That will obviously fall over time. We're talking launch prices here. Just to give you, by way of comparison, you know, so we've got the 620 at €190. How does that compare to, say, the 710 at launch? Well, that was €270. The 610, which is kind of the current low-cost device, was €189, so undercutting both of those. And the Lumia 510, which is the kind of cheapest of the cheap Windows phone device and obviously running 7.8, was €150. So, okay, the 620 is €40 more than that, but it is a Windows Phone 8 device. So I think, you know, we will see this device rapidly become established on the very lowest tier contracts for free, no question, but also in the pay-as-you-go market, just as we've had the 610 and the 710 in that space. Honestly, Nokia's got that price down more quickly than I ever expected it to for Windows Phone 8 devices. And kind of make no mistake, I think Windows Phone 8 does have quite a lot extra going for it. You know, in terms of some of the hardware, obviously that's up-specced, and there's, you know, NFC, there's micro SD card support, but also in terms of the software, there's a very definite list of improvements that I think are quite attractive even in the mid-tier. So, yeah, I think this could end up selling a lot of devices, Ewan.
This is the foot soldier. One of the things that I found most interesting this week was the ad duplex numbers, which we linked to in the flow on All About Windows Phone. Ad duplex is an ad serving company, and a lot of Windows Phone applications use it. So they have a good idea of how many phones are actually in constant use. The top one was the Nokia 710 at 24%. The Lumia 800 was at 80%. But the Nokia 610 was at 17%, the number three Windows Phone in terms of people using applications on that. And the 610 really hasn't been seen in the Western markets. We've talked about before that you could find it if you really do, but this is the one that's really been pushed in Asia and South America. This is the budget one. This is kind of when the 620 comes in as well. The 620 is going to be one of the biggest selling Windows phones in 2013. I still think the Lumia 800 will outsell it, to be perfectly honest. But that's a Windows Phone 7. In terms of Windows Phone 8, I think we're looking at the most popular phone here, purely because of the price, because people will go in, they'll see the attraction of the Lumia range, they'll see the 920 pushed, they'll see all the colors pushed on their televisions, they'll go in, and as usual, as we remember from Nokia and from Samsung and from Apple the other days, the high-end model gets people in the door. They go in and go, here's a model that does 85 to 90% of everything that that model does, and we'll give it to you on contract for $10 a month.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And like you say, those ad duplex numbers were really interesting, especially the 610, given that's been out obviously a lot shorter time than the 710 and the 800. I mean, it is available in some European markets on pay-as-you-go, and I understand it's actually selling quite well there. Interesting, it's also doing well in the enterprise space, in that companies are looking for an exchange-capable smartphone that they can kind of then manage from the back end without any concern. And so it's kind of becoming the cheap exchange phone. I'm sure that the 620 will kind of follow in its footsteps there. I do think it's worth talking a little bit about the design, because it's, I think, quite distinctive here. One of the things that's, always the concern with the lower cost devices is how much do they sacrifice in the kind of design and materials department. You can't get away from it. When you're making a cheaper device, it's going to be made out of cheaper stuff. But, based on what I've seen, and I haven't spent a long time with the 620, I actually think this is very effective. I mean, Marco Antisari, when talking about it, talked about how they were increasing the radius, and that's actually increasing the kind of curved corners as they went down the range. So it looks quite striking initially, but it's also using these shells. It's much like actually the 820, and it's kind of got a shell that peels off the back of the device and comes in multiple colors. And Nokia introducing what they're calling a dual shot color technique. And how this actually works is there's kind of a base color, and it's all polycarbonate again. And then on top of that, they kind of put a transparent or a translucent polycarbonate layer, sort of a second layer. And so it's almost like there's, two layers of, it's not paint, obviously, but that's what it looks like. And so in some cases, it's just, translucent in that it'll come through, but it just kind of gives this slightly shiny effect. In some cases, they're using gloss finish. Some cases, it's a matte finish. And then in two of the devices, and this is the lime green and the orange one, they're actually combining two colors together to kind of give this effect. So in the case of the lime green, they're combining yellow and blue or cyan, which obviously from the original colors, together to give this kind of green effect. And having seen it, it is really quite striking, and I think it looks really nice. I'm sure it's something we'll see elsewhere in the range, but it kind of does give this almost more playful feel to the design, which really does stand out. And I'm sure, given it's the polycarbonate stuff and the way this fits around the device, it's going to be pretty durable as well. So almost ideal for this mid-tier device.
Orange!
Orange!
I want orange! I want orange!
So we know what colour Ewan's going to be getting.
Yeah, actually, the green is an interesting one as well, because I remember the Nokia C5, one of the old Symbian devices, which had the colours there. And the green was actually a really interesting colour for that budget phone. And again, this colour is great because it does come down to fashion at this end. Yes, as we said, the 920 will get people in, but you know, people go, oh, I've got a whole bundle of colors to choose from. That's a really, really important thing. I know us geekerotis would prefer black and then maybe white to go, oh, it's white. But when it comes down to fashion, you know, the oranges, the pinks, the purples, that's what you want.
I agree. And I think it's clever, of course, because these are removable. You can change them as you like. And that also makes it easier for Nokia to control kind of the numbers going out. So if they want to swap over or provide a particular color to operate, they can very easily. And I have no doubt there'll be kind of custom colors of this as well at some point. One thing I did want to mention on these covers is one of the problems when you do these kind of snap-on covers is how do you deal with the kind of external ports? And it's particularly related to the 3.5mm audio jack, because quite often you add that extra bit of thickness and it's hard to get the jack in there, and it's a design issue. They've actually solved it by building in this 3.5mm audio jack into the covers themselves, and they kind of have this place that they slot in. I do wonder about the vulnerability of that, but having said that, you're not changing colours all that often, so we'll have to wait and see. But I did think it was a clever design, you know, almost technique to, you know, fix this problem of dealing with the audio jack on these cases or these covers that just come off the back. So we're going to be keeping a close eye on the Lumia 620, definitely one to watch. And the one thing we haven't mentioned in all of this is because it's got the 3.8-inch screen, it's actually significantly smaller, of course, than the other Lumia devices. And so I know a lot of people looked at the 820 and the 920 and gone, ooh, that's too big for me. And I think that's a perfectly understandable position to take. But this one comes in at 61 millimeters wide. That compares to the 920, which I think is about 70 millimeters wide, and the 820 is about 68 millimeters wide. So, you know, it's 8 to 10 millimeters narrower than those devices. That means it can be held in one hand by everybody and can be used by one hand, with one hand by everyone. That kind of boundary for one hand use is generally accepted to be 60 millimeters. The 620 is just above that, but I think a lot of people will, you know, like that smaller form factor. I mean, we always say it's a compromise. You know, of course, people like having big screens, but it means a bigger device. And so that's the other reason I think the 620 will do quite well, because certainly on the feedback we've had on some of the reviews we've written for the other Windows Phone 8 device, everyone's going, I'd like a device with a smaller screen. It's certainly one of the things that caught our eye about the 8S. But I guess that's enough on the 620, Ewan?
I think so, yes. Although if Nokia are listening, if you could just put a 1.5 gigahertz CPU chip in one of them and ship it to me, and I won't tell anybody, just give me a little bit, just give me a little bit more specification, put 16 gig on there, give me the processor that matches the top end devices, I would be very happy. At the moment, I'm quite happy and I'm still calling dibs on this one. So let's go to the bigger handset. Let's go to one of the biggest smartphone markets in the world, China Mobile, and the Nokia Lumia 920T. Now, Rafe, the T means that it goes on TD-CDM-CMA-BHS, which is one of the other Chinese frequencies. And that's been an issue for smartphones going into China before. But because they require different technology, because they require different circuitry, they can't just use the same off-the-shelf models and have the economy of scale without a huge commitment from one of the networks that are working out there. So this is actually quite an important step for Nokia, because we've seen that China used to be a very big stronghold for Symbian, over 55% market share just 18 months ago, and it's down now to about like 4 or 5%. It's quite a low number. So this is, again, one of those areas where Nokia are hoping that they can get back into the game. So in my mind, the 920T is actually quite an important device.
It is. You know, this is one that people should kind of care about if they're interested in Windows Phone. Of course, they're not going to own it themselves. I mean, you did slightly massacre the Chinese frequency there.
It's, yeah, I know. It's not BHS, it's MNS. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's TD-SCDMA, which you're quite right in saying. It's basically Chinese 3G. We don't need to worry about the technical details, but it's the technology used by China's biggest operator, China Mobile. And obviously, you know, a smartphone has to have that in order to be able to use 3G on that network. Nokia's done quite a lot of work in the past with various Symbian devices. You know, there's been versions of the N8 and other Symbian devices running on that. And you know, it's one of the reasons that Nokia's done quite well in China. More recently, you've had Android's Android devices coming in using that technology as well, especially some of the homegrown Chinese manufacturers. You know, they've enjoyed quite a bit of success there. But this is the first Windows Phone device to use this technology, and in one sense, just as importantly, to do the deal with China Mobile. Why should you care about China Mobile? Well, it's got 700 million customers, or something like that. Maybe getting the numbers slightly wrong, but it's the biggest operator in China in the biggest market. So it's effectively the world's biggest operator in terms of number of customers. Of course, not all of them are going to be able to go out and buy a 920T, but it's, you know, a market that a lot of manufacturers would love to be able to get into. Talking about the Apple iPhone 5, for example, it's not something that's available on China Mobile yet. Indeed, I think that's true of the iPhone more generally. And it's a deal that they've been trying to do, and there's probably been some sticking point over the politics of all of that. But obviously, Nokia's been able to get in there, do the deal, and is not the first of the really big high-end smartphones on China Mobile, but it's certainly one of the significant ones, and it will have a certain first-mover advantage. So I think it's quite a notable feather in Nokia's cap, and certainly the market seemed to agree with that. And, it gave Nokia's share price a boost in the middle of the week.
I do think, though, that we have to be aware that it's an incredibly tough market. Analyst International gave out some numbers for Q3 market shares in China. BlackBerry, Windows Phone, iOS and Symbian OS are all in around about 2.5%. Android market share is over 90% of smartphones in the Chinese smartphone market. That is a huge number. It is literally the only choice for a smartphone out there. There's a lot at play here, and I think if Windows Phone as a whole goes from 2.5% to 5% in the Chinese market, that's actually a win. It's a very strong win. They've doubled themselves, and they've kind of slowed down the Android juggernaut, but it's such a different market. As a slight aside, if you don't mind, Rafe, can I just slide very briefly into Android?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a Meizu MX5. Which is it, the MX5 or the M10? Anyway, it's one of the Chinese so-called knockoff iPhones running Android. And I have to say, it's a wonderful piece of design. It looks suspiciously like an iPhone 3GS, but it sits with 64 gig of memory. It's one of the first quad cores to run at 1.5 gigahertz. It runs Android with its own UI, suitable for the Chinese market, but still has that compatibility with all the other Android applications out there. And when you see phones like this, and you have the Meizus of the time, there's always the Mixamoos as well, and there's a number of other manufacturers that are doing some really high quality, high specification phones, and this one was $300, the MX, and you have to go that it is a completely different marketscape to what people, the majority of people in this podcast, will be familiar to. We always talk about the difference between the American market, the European market, and the differences that the UK market has. But just to stress, the Chinese market is so radically different, has a completely different set of rules, that it's, what works here can't work there.
That's absolutely right. And, talking about Android, there's also various forks going on in China. And so when people talk about Android market share out there, it can be slightly misleading. That's not to, you're right, massive market share, really important there. And as you say, devices like that and the knockoff devices, but even not leaving aside those kind of knockoff devices, there's a lot of, Chinese homegrown manufacturers. A lot of attention gets paid to ZTE or Huawei and those companies. But, and to be fair, they have significant market share in their own market, but there's also quite literally hundreds of other phone manufacturers churning out devices. I mean, it's not really surprising given that China is the place where an awful lot of smartphones are now built. Nokia has a couple of big factories out there, of course. Apple has them as well, HTC and Samsung. And if it's not in China, it's in that other part of the Asian markets down there. And so it's quite easy to forget, as you say, how different it is. And also, it's not just about the devices, it's also about the things people are using on the phone, so content and services. One of the things that Nokia kind of emphasized when they announced the Lumia 920T was that they'd come up with a number of partnerships. So, for example, they've signed partnership agreements with Sinus, Sohu, Baidu and Renren. Those are all providing internet services and various types. But you can think of them as the equivalent of things like Facebook or Twitter and Google for search. those are all different out in the Chinese market. So you need to partner with them and have those on your device and integrated in the same way. And some of that's done through apps. Some of it's actually integrated into the platform itself. Nokia's, you know, talked about it creating the best internet experience, but actually it's just the kind of the basic thing you need, because of course all the homegrown devices tend to have this anyway. There's a couple of other ones. There's Yipang, which is I guess a deal service similar to Groupon, and they've done a deal to be able to tap on NFC panels in kiosks to get deals. And then just one that kind of caught my attention, similar to the Virgin Atlantic deal that was announced when the 920 was first announced, there's actually a deal with Air China to put wireless charging points in Beijing airport VIP lounges. Just a small touch, but an example of how you kind of have to do a lot of the deals all over again for the Chinese market.
I think we should do some software now, Rafe, but before we do that, if we do have any listeners to the podcast out there in China, I'd be really interested to see the differences in the marketing approaches that are taken by Nokia, Samsung, HTC, ZTE, Huawei, and all of that. How much similarity they have with Western, and what different things are focused on. Obviously, lifestyles are a big focus on here, but I know, like, for example, in the Chinese markets, there's a much greater propensity to have even more applications bundled into the phone than available for download. You know, everybody's expecting music subscription services and free downloads on there. Just be very interested to see what differences there are in the marketing of the device.
Indeed, you're always keen to hear from the audience, so please get in touch. You can email Rafe at All About Windows Phone, you and All About Windows Phone, or just contact through Twitter or the site itself. There are a couple of Chinese language websites for Windows Phone that I'd recommend, wpdang.com and winp.cn. Both those are worth checking out if you kind of want to get a flavour of the local market. You will have to use the translation tools via Google or Bing or whatever your preferred option is. But as Ewan says, yes, a bit of software now. AlphaJax, this is an interesting one, Ewan. It's been available in the marketplace, but it's now kind of been Xbox branded, hasn't it?
It has, yes, and it's interesting for two things. The first one is it was delayed a week, which means the week that I was in Amsterdam, there was no Xbox Live release that Wednesday, and I think that's the first time since September last year in 2011 that we've not had a weekly release. Now, you say the horror, but the thing is, when you've got people expecting a new game every Wednesday, it really does build up the confidence in the platform. And I know Microsoft have never actually officially committed to doing it every Wednesday, but Pavlovian, it was just like, well, where is it, you know? We know it's going to be AlphaJax. So I found it unusual, but thankfully Nokia have been doing extra releases on the Saturday, so we can at least sneak in our weekly Windows Xbox Live review with Trivial Pursuit. AlphaJax moving up in the same way that Wordament has moved up. The big issue that will be for people who are already players of AlphaJax, which is they have to move servers, and they have to change the profile that you use. AlphaJax, up till now, and I know, Rafe, that you've been a heavy player of this title, have their own profile on the AlphaJax servers. These are not going to last beyond the end of the year. If you want to play AlphaJax in 2013, you will need to play on the Xbox Live version. You will be using your Xbox Live profile and avatar and the achievement scores and the alert system on that. Those of you who are using AlphaJax at the moment, either in the ad-supported version from the indie developers or in the paid-for download which strips out the adverts, you have until the end of the year, and then the servers will be going off. Rafe, as an existing player, I'd love to get your opinion on it, but for me, it's good because it means that there's going to be a huge flood of people coming to this game now simply because it's Xbox Live, and everybody starts at zero again. Everybody gets to re-establish themselves in the global ranking tables and everything, and I quite like that idea. And Wordament seemed to do it quite well, and they were very transparent about the process. And the AlphaJax team, again, very transparent about the process as well. It's been a four-week handover period so people can get used to the idea. So in terms of the mechanics and the promotion and everything, you know, it's great. I only have one complaint about the whole thing, which is that it is completely ad-supported. There isn't a way that I can actually buy this to remove the adverts. And I think I can understand the reasoning behind it. But, you know, for those people who've paid for the title before to be ad-free, then I have to go back with its ads, and let's face it, the ads are quite bright and garish. It just feels slightly icky.
Yep, I completely agree with you there. Honestly, I'm never that obsessed about what scores I've got or my ranking number or anything like that, but yes, it's a bit annoying to lose them. I was actually more annoyed that having paid for the game, that I was now going to have to go back to having ads in it. So yes, I'd agree, I'd like to see a paid for version as well. On the other hand, the fact that you are going to have so many more people playing it can only be a good thing. And one of the things that I like so much about Alpha Jacks is the ease of kind of getting a game. It will match you up with someone of a similar skill, so the ranking points are quite important. But also, by bringing in the kind of Xbox element to it, it's much easier to find your kind of existing gaming buddies. You've got your contacts imported, and so I was immediately able to start off a game with you and a couple of other people I've got on my Xbox contact list. You can add me if you want to, Rafe Blanford. Please invite me to play a game if you wish. And Alpha Jacks is kind of, we should probably mention before we say anything else, it's kind of an implementation or a clone of Scrabble, the word game, but it's really nicely done. It doesn't feel quite so busy as some of the other kind of Scrabble clones. It's got its own unique flavour to it, and you know, you can't help but compare it to something like Words with Friends, which by comparison is not nearly as well implemented. It's kind of doesn't have the same polish or the smoothness to it. That Alpha Jacks is better performance. You won't have it crashing or freezing on you like you sometimes do with Words with Friends. And although it doesn't integrate with Facebook, it is very easy to kind of set up a new game and have someone of a similar skill, so you don't get beaten senseless. You actually use the ranking points that you build up over time as you play more and more games to work out how good a player you are, and will match you up with someone of a similar skill. So better than Word with Friends, and if you're on a Windows phone device, I'd thoroughly recommend it. And as a free download, why not give it a go?
I do have one or two other queries on this one, and the biggest one is, when I open up the game now, there's lots of people going, I want to play a game with you, because they've done the let's match you up with an opponent. I want to not have that. If I want to have a random game, I want it to, it's something like Words with Friends, for example. It will say, it won't give you all the invites. It will hold them, sort of digital holding pen. And then when you go for an opponent, it will match you up with one. Rather than sending, if I look at my game now, there's like five or six people now who've made their first move and trying to play with me. I just want to put all those alerts off. It just gets in the way. I want to be alerted when I want to make a move. I don't want to be alerted that there's somebody random trying to do it when I'm just not in the mood for that. And that's, it's actually makes it cluttered, the whole Xbox experience. And I'm not sort of person that would like that sort of clutter. But the big advantage for me, Rafe, is if you go around all the online Scrabble helping sites, Alpha Jacks is not an option on the board design. So if you got Words by Post, Angry Words, Lexulus, Word Friend, Word Feud, Word Scraper, Word Wise, they're all there. And you, so when you go to Words with Friends, there's a hint of, oh, what do you mean you've managed to play the word Bodhijazaru? You don't know that word. You can't do that with Alpha Jacks because it's not set up on any of these popular services. Give it a week or two, we probably will. Which means that the games feel actually more natural. Rafe, in our recent words, the words are simple words. Dynamos. Okay, admittedly, it's a seven letter, but, it's an understandable word. Float. It's an understandable word. This matching up is great. And I suspect that what will happen to the matching is all these people who use the cheating services will all be grouped in together. Anybody who plays a word that's not Kintar, that's a Q and not a U, Kintar and QI being the main ones, they're obviously cheating. But move on. So let's just see what Alpha Jacks does. Now you get the popular ones in. And if you dare go and play some stupid word in the middle of our game, then grrr.
I have to admit, I wasn't entirely sure what you were going on about. But yes, that's a good point. You can't cheat so easily.
That's very important in online gaming, Rafe.
It is, although some of us have actually played it enough over the years that come up with some words that you see, and so you say QI is always the one that rescues you when you have that Q but don't have the U. And if you can get it onto a triple word score, you can get a very nice total out of it.
Yeah. He says beating me 575-16.
Wasn't quite that bad. I think you got 64.
Yeah, something like, yeah, he's still in 570, though. I mean, come on. Gotcha!
But yeah, I'd recommend it as a download. It is one of the, I would say, highlights of the recent Xbox titles, and it's always good when a free title comes out because you get so many more people playing it.
Indeed, yes. There's lots of stuff going on in the Windows Store as well. We've got more markets opening up for developers. We're well into, I think, 150 available markets for free downloads now, Rafe, aren't we?
I think you might be exaggerating slightly there. It's an additional set of markets in and out to 105 altogether.
That's there's a 1 and a 5 in there and a 0.
Yes, but slightly transposed. But okay. It's now sort of not quite comparable with the Apple App Store and Google Play, which I think are around 115 and 150 respectively. But obviously, you know, it's in the same ballpark now. It's really part of the expansion, obviously, with Windows Phone 8. Not all of those will apply to Windows Phone 7.5 and 7.8. That's because some of the requirements in the platform to support those other markets aren't there. It's around character sets and language, fairly obviously. But, you know, it's good news for developers because they can, you know, distribute and sell their applications in even more markets. And as you say, there are some markets in those the two platforms we're talking about, which are only free, whereas for this is all paid markets, so you know, you can sell apps in all of these. The other thing I thought was worth mentioning with these updates, and there's been a whole lot, and there's been some tweaks to the design of the store, or the web version of it, is that you can now sideload applications via a micro SD card. This is something that I know a lot of people have come from, say, Symbian, quite like the idea of, because with that platform, you can install SIS files on Windows Phone, obviously it's ZAP files. It's not quite opening it up completely. You still have to download the ZAP files from the Windows Phone Marketplace. They have to be the current version. And obviously you have to have a device with a micro SD card. So we're talking Lumia 820, now Lumia 620 as well, I guess. The HTC 8S or the Samsung Active S. So not all devices will support it. Why is it useful? Well, you know, if you're on limited bandwidth on your device, maybe you're, you know, got a small cap, or you don't have 3G available, or Wi-Fi is not readily available, something like that. If you're downloading some of the games, they can get pretty big. You know, they can be 50 megabytes plus, and there's certain reference applications that have similar big downloads. So obviously, it makes it easier to download without using up all your bandwidth allowance or your data cap. So once you install them onto the SD card, or rather you copy them across, you put the SD card back in your device, and when you open up the store, you'll then see an entry that says SD card. Click on that, it'll list the applications that you put onto the SD card, and you can choose to install them. You still will need a data connection because it will go to the marketplace or to the store and say, I'm installing this, and do all the back end stuff, but it won't need it for the actual download of the ZAP file. It's obviously also helpful if you're an enterprise user working in IT support, setting up multiple devices. You could have a micro SD card ready to go with all the apps ready to install, and probably a slightly faster process and going through the marketplace. So a nice little addition to the store functionality there.
Indeed, and of course, if you are in a business, you do have the business hub that's on as well. We haven't seen a huge amount on that and playing around with stuff, but there's also another option there to do delivery over the corporate Wi-Fi network, for example.
That's right. I did see an example of this the other day, and obviously it's really aimed at the bigger businesses, and we should say there are actual so tools that let you do some application deployment and settings and that kind of thing if you're a big enterprise. But I think there will be some companies that are maybe a bit smaller, you know, it's maybe 15 devices set up, which won't necessarily be taking advantage of that sort of thing, but might still have some person having to set up 15 devices in a row. So it's a saving there. So it's not an essential feature by any means, and it is still pretty limited. You know, this isn't unlocking the devices or ZAP files from anywhere. It is very specifically from the marketplace. But I'm glad it was added because I know it's something that a lot of people have been requesting.
Indeed, yeah. Tell me about Photo Beamer.
Yes, this is an app I wanted to mention this week. We're getting through quite a few things, but I wanted to mention this one for two reasons. Firstly, it's another one of these Nokia exclusive titles, which makes the teeth grinding sounds from the HTC and Samsung device owners. But also, it's a very easy way to get photos off your device and share them with anyone who's got an internet connected device. The way it works is that there's an app on the phone that sends pictures to this Photo Beamer service, but the clever way is that how it gets it set up. So on your internet connected device, and this can be a computer, laptop, tablet, TV, whatever, you go to the Photo Beamer website, and then using your device, you scan the barcode that appears, and that creates a link between your device and the internet connected device, and you can then flip through your photos, and obviously it's all done over an internet connection, the pictures are sent. So it's kind of a bit like using, you know, something like DLNA or any of these Wi-Fi sharing services, but it makes it incredibly easy to set up, and you don't have to worry about network setup or anything like that, and will work with any internet connected device. So, you know, very simple to use. So I played about with this, and actually it's a rather fun way to share photos, and you can start, you know, you can get there in probably about 15 or 20 seconds, assuming you've got a decent data connection, because that is obviously one thing it does require. So well worth checking out if you ever, you know, are sharing photos or sharing stuff on your phone and want to show it off on a bigger screen. Particularly important because the Windows Phone 8 Nokia devices don't actually support DLNA at the moment. That's the app that's known as Play 2, which, you know, shares media over a Wi-Fi or indeed any network, or local network, I should say. You know, that's music, videos, pictures. Photo Beam is just limited to pictures. But, you know, while we're waiting for that DNA compatibility to come, which Nokia says will happen kind of January next year, so not too long to wait, this is an easy way to share photos. So, yeah, worth checking out. I was a bit sceptical at first, but I was actually rather impressed by it.
Given that Steve's not here, I'll do Steve's right. You know, if it was an open platform and you had access to mass storage and cards and could pull stuff off instead of this dodgy file system, then anybody, programmers, would be able to do this. This is just filling in gaps that were purposely put in there as roadblocks because of the choice of the operating system.
Yep, that's all true. Although I would say if you've got a micro SD card device, again, we've just listed them in the last story, you can, of course, take that card out and stick it in your TV or your device or whatever, and of course if you're plugging into a PC it uses MTP mode, and so that kind of gives you that ability to mount photos very easily. But this is obviously a completely wireless solution, so I was actually quite impressed by this. And actually you can do the same thing using Bluetooth, but obviously it's a bit fiddly to set up and doesn't always work depending on the device you're connecting to. What stood out for me about this was work with any device without any, you know, significant setup, apart from, as I say, going to the website, scanning the code, and then it all just starts working. And the kind of time it took to transfer photos, I was actually pleasantly surprised how quick everything was.
Indeed. It's also one of those areas where if you're just plonking it down on a wireless charging pad at your home, it just pops up. It's like, there you go, it's charging, it's transmitting. You don't need to worry about the extra battery or energy requirements that this sort of application is putting through.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Time is running out, as is my honey-infused tea for my bad cough and sore throat going through. So can we just do the app picks? Because I've missed doing the app picks for a while.
Yes, we can. And I'm going to go first. Because okay. I wrote a review on this because I liked it so much. And this is the...
Right, for a review. Woo! Was it the Nokia E50?
No. It was the Met Office app. This really only applies to UK users, so everyone else can go and make a cup of tea for 30 seconds. But the Met Office...
I'm British! You can't listen to this. Go and make tea!
You can download this for free from the Windows Store. It is only Windows Phone 8, I'm afraid to say, but I'm still going to mention it because I've been really impressed by it. The Met Office, for those that don't know, it's kind of the UK's National Meteorological Service, provides weather forecasts to the media and lots of other companies. And so their data is generally very accurate. And the UK, we are all a bit obsessed with the weather, I suppose, but it does have very changeable conditions. So having accurate weather predictions is something that's quite important. The app's been well implemented. What I liked about it was, you know, it has the kind of the top layer where you get the summary forecast and you get severe weather warnings, and then you can add in listed locations and get weather for those areas as well. But then when you tap on a location or on the summary, it'll dive down into a detailed 5-day forecast, and then you can tap on one of the days and then you get a detailed forecast for that day in 3-hourly intervals. So lots of information, and it's got things like, you know, the UV, precipitation percentage chance, sunset and sunrise times, as well as kind of temperature and the real feel and kind of a text description of what the weather's going to be doing. It also gives access to the text version of the forecast, and those are the ones that, you know, you can read on the Met Office website, and that's, you know, what all the newspapers and other media base their forecasts off. The same applies to weather warning. The other thing that I really liked about it was the weather map that it provides, and it goes beyond the basics that you often get in other applications. And you kind of get a view of the UK, you can zoom in to a local level and get extra detail and load in more information. And the default is for rain, but you can also get one for kind of a weather forecast, so the weather symbols that you tend to get on weather maps. You can get a radar, which, you know, cloud cover, UV, wind speed, temperature. So a lot of detail in there, but at the same time, it doesn't sort of flood you with information. You can get it what level of detail you need when you want. So thoroughly recommended. It does need a bit of work on the live tile and some of the Windows Phone integration. I'd like to see integrated into the lock screen, for example. But it's a free download, and I would say it's one of the best weather apps available for Windows Phone. But as I say, it is just limited to the UK. So if you live in the UK, give it a download. If you're visiting the UK, probably download it as well, and you can get an idea just how changeable our weather can be.
Yes, and does it give you details for Shannon, Rockall, Hebrides, Bailey, Lundy, Fastnet, Southeast Island, and Fitzroy.
It doesn't do Finisterre either, no. It doesn't do the shipping forecast. That is available, I think, in a separate app as well, not from the Met Office, from a third party. But since that's maybe not such mainstream usage, if you do want to listen to that, you can maybe go and listen to the radio. Or go
Radio
for
a Long Wave, 192.
Exactly.
Just to pick you up there, Fitzroy is Finisterre. They changed the name to avoid confusion with one of the French regions in the French Meteorological Office.
Typical.
Typical, yeah. Now you go make a cup of tea and learn your shipping forecast regions.
I will.
Call yourself an Englishman. I don't know. Right. Do you know the one I want to pick out here? Okay, it's Maps on the HTC 8X. It looks like Bing Maps, but the offline downloading of maps, i.e. Amsterdam and the Netherlands, reminds me of Nokia Maps. So my app pick of the week is the settings dialog in the HTC 8X Maps application that lets me download all of the Netherlands last week locally, so I didn't have to use data to get it. But Rafe, I've no idea if this is Bing or Nokia or what's going on with mapping in Windows Phone 8.
Ah, yes, good question, Ewan. I find this area a bit confusing as well. What you're talking about is the default Maps client on Windows Phone. It's not Bing Maps anymore. It's not branded that way, nor is it Nokia Maps, which is what you get on the Nokia devices. So this default Maps app is, however, based on the Nokia location platform, so it's using Nokia data. So effectively, the offline map functionality that you're talking about has come from Nokia, and it's to do with the licensing of the data from the product, you know. They charge more basically for an offline usage than they do if you're downloading it over the air, which is why so many map apps use over the air kind of tiles rather than stored on the device. Also, you know, obviously a question of space and things like that. But this is, if you like, the Microsoft Maps application, the default one that comes with Windows Phone 8. And I think while we're talking about this, we probably mention that there are Nokia users out there who are kind of frustrated that they haven't got access to this default Maps app, because it's not on their devices, except it is. It's hidden, and there's actually now a third-party app that will let you launch that very easily. So I guess there's an extra bonus app pick this week, and we'll link it in the show notes. Why might you want to do that? Well, some people think the default Maps app loads a bit quicker and the performance is better. It uses a different set of search results. It's using Bing Search on the background rather than a kind of Nokia location platform for search results. So there are some differences. Also, the way it displays traffic. It's part of slight confusion around maps on Windows Phone 8. I mean, the basic story is that rather than having Bing Maps as kind of the default mapping platform, it's now switched over to the Nokia mapping platform, but it's not made very obvious unless you look at kind of the name down in the bottom corner for the copyright of the maps and things like that. We could then get into Nokia Drive Plus as well. Nokia has Nokia Drive Plus, which is kind of an enhanced version of Nokia Drive, which is also being offered to other manufacturers, yet none of them have actually taken it up yet. We assume that's because there is a licensing cost involved and they didn't want to pay Nokia for it. So that's kind of a very brief summary of the map situation. We will come back to this in the future because it's actually a topic that would be worth talking about, because I think it creates a bit of unnecessary confusion.
Indeed, yes. But at the end of the day, I still was able to find my hotel.
Excellent. So you really enjoyed having offline maps, and actually it's the perfect example of the use case. You want to use it in a foreign country where otherwise you'll be paying prohibitive data roaming rates.
Indeed, exactly. I mean, I think the SIM card I picked up was 150 meg for €7.50 or something. But, you know, still, again, no data counter. It's like, how much of that 150 have I used? And having them offline just gave me the confidence to use maps.
Yeah, and it's also, of course, the speed of loading the maps. I notice it particularly in a rural area if I'm on a 2G connection. Over the air maps, it's not quite unusable, but it's very frustrating when you're sitting waiting for the maps to load, where of course if you've got them offline they will load up immediately.
Indeed, yes. Links to those applications mentioned there, all the other stuff in the show notes back at allaboutwindowsphone.com. Unless you're using our Windows Phone application, which is now Windows Phone 8 compatible, you'll find the links in the link section if you press the link button at the bottom of the podcast page, Rafe.
You will indeed, yes, and do download it and let us know what you think.
Yes, yeah, and if you can't, leave your stars and your comment ratings in the Windows Phone store as well. And to be honest, if you've got an application that you're enjoying on your phone, no matter what it is, do take a couple of minutes just to go into the marketplace, or sorry, the Windows Store, they've changed the name again, on your phone, give it a star rating, give it a sentence or two, because developers thrive on that feedback. And I know there's automatic tools and there's ways that they can get reports back, but if you really enjoy an application, and the one that springs to mind for me that I'm still playing is the Treasures of Montezuma, sort of Bejeweled type clone. Just leave a little bit of review saying, bought it 3 months ago, still playing it, great value for money. It takes very little time out of your day, but it really helps all the developers out there, and I know that they appreciate it. I know that I love reading all about Windows Phone reviews, basically because I can hassle Rafe to hassle the developer, and I don't have to do any of the fallback stuff. But do contribute to the ecosystem in every way you can. It will help.
Hear, hear.
Yes. Right, so, allaboutwindowsphone.com. Who knows when the podcast is going to be on next week, but it'll be on at some point, won't it, Rafe?
It will indeed, yes.
Yeah, so probably Thursday or Friday again, just to give us a bit of separation of days. If you're out there and you want to give us feedback, here's one for you. Tell us what day you'd like the podcast to be released.
Yes, that's a good one.
Do you prefer Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday even? And we'll see what we can do. Might be good to just get a, rather than weekly, nice locked down rhythm. But let's see what we come back. If you don't come back with any feedback, we'll just end up carrying on doing it like a shotgun here. Right.
So you think it's like a shotgun, where I've actually been very carefully posting it at the weekend most of the time. The last few weeks have been a bit different as we've been in different places, so weren't able to record it quite in time. But this will be returning to our kind of what has been our regular Saturday slot.
Oh, fair enough then. The last bit of ammunition is the one that counts, okay? Yes. Right. All about Windows Phone. I'm Ewan Spence. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining in. That was also Rafe Blanford.
Thank you, everybody.
And we shall catch you, obviously, next weekend. Ta-ra for now.